From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, two closely watched trials head for a verdict. In Taunton, Massachusetts, a case involving texts between two teenagers is likely to turn on the question of whether one person's words can cause the suicide of another. And in Norristown, Pennsylvania, jurors in the Bill Cosby trial say they are deadlocked and unable to reach a decision. It's Friday, June 16th.
This is Conrad Henry Roy III reporting about social anxiety. Social anxiety to me is the inability to function properly in a manner that you want to in social situations.
Catherine Seeley, what can you tell us about Conrad Roy?
Conrad Roy was an 18-year-old. He lived in southeast Massachusetts. He worked on a tugboat with his father.
I am who I am. I need to be comfortable in my skin. And in order to be comfortable in my skin, I have to just be happy with myself, of who I am. Conrad Henry Roy III. I'm an introvert. I didn't really connect with people in high school. Had a hard time making friends. Just felt alone, disconnected from everyone else. I feel like it has a negative impact on my self-esteem, the way I feel about things.
And he suffered from depression, a lot of anxiety, and in 2014, he killed himself.
So why is there a trial going on right now that revolves around him?
Well, he had a very close friend named Michelle Carter, who was 17 at the time. She called herself his girlfriend and him her boyfriend, although he didn't really buy into that. But nonetheless, they were very close. And she bought into his plan to kill himself. And she, by the end, was very encouraging of him.
Encouraged him to take his own life.
Correct.
And how does she even do, how does that even work? How did she do it?
Well, there was a flurry of texts between them on July 12th, which is the date that he killed himself. She had walked him through multiple ways of killing himself. He decided to get a generator that could emit carbon monoxide in the cabin of his truck. She wasn't anywhere near the scene, but he set it all up. She told him to go to a deserted parking lot, a Kmart parking lot, and they talked about what time of day, and they were texting back and forth early in the morning, and she was saying, well, this actually might be a good time because there aren't too many people around. He decided to go back and went to get ice cream with his family. They're texting constantly throughout the day. He then eventually, around 5 o'clock or so in the afternoon, goes to the Kmart parking lot. They're texting back and forth, and then they're talking on the phone. She's been saying things like, do it, you've just got to do it. She says this over and over again. And he says, well, I'm afraid, I'm scared, I'm going to miss my family. She says, I'll take care of them for you, even though she doesn't really even know them. So eventually he gets in the truck, he turns on the motor. By this point, his last text to her is something like, okay, I'm almost there. And then they talk on the phone. They have a 40-minute conversation. We don't have a recording of that. But later, she texts a girlfriend and says, I told him to get back in the truck. He got out at one point. It was working. The carbon monoxide was working, but he was scared. And I told him to get back in.
So by her own account, she is making sure that he goes through with this to the very end.
Yes. She's right there. Virtually right there.
Right.
So the Commonwealth of Massachusetts has charged Michelle Carter with involuntary manslaughter.
And what kind of a sentence could that charge carry?
She faces up to 20 years in prison.
Kit, how does the relationship get to that point where she could want this and encourage it, and he could be so susceptible, if we believe he was? How did that happen?
They were both very troubled kids. Hmm. He had tried committing suicide before.
I mean, I just had a feeling that no matter what, I feel like it was always on his mind. And he told me all the time that he didn't think he would get better. And he always had negative thoughts and everything.
I think she became one of the few people he believed understood him.
I told him that I loved him. And yep. I told him that a lot of people loved him.
Yeah.
And that, like, without him, nothing would be the same. And I tried to tell him, like, I had personal issues that I got help for, and I told him that he should come with me and get the help that he needed, but he refused. He said that no one would be able to help him, and it would make him worse if he got help.
And this is what her defense lawyer argues, is that she really was the only person saying, okay, I know how miserable you are. Hmm. And I understand that taking your life will make you much happier.
Wow.
So I think they were definitely on the same plane.
I had a feeling like if he didn't get help, then something was going to happen. And I was trying to get help for him sooner. I like wanted him to go with me, and I should have done something sooner, but by the time, it was just too late.
So Kip, what is this trial ultimately about? Is it about whether you can hold someone legally responsible for someone else's death?
That's a big part of it. Another part of it is, how can you do that? What is the level of culpability of someone who's not even there? And I think one of the concerns legally is that if the judge finds her guilty, that opens the door to virtually any thing that you say to someone else being potentially criminal behavior. If you say to somebody, I really think you ought to kill yourself, right now in Massachusetts, that's not illegal. What would make it illegal is, I think you should kill yourself, and here's a gun.
Hmm.
Or here's some pills. But without that, and without being on the scene, this creates a big disconnect. And this is why a lot of legal experts we've talked to are really doubtful that this will be a guilty verdict.
Kit, is the question of culpability, is it about whether there's a difference between someone holding a gun to their head and me standing there next to them and saying, do it, versus someone holding a gun to their head and me texting them from 1,000 miles away saying, do it?
This gets to the nub of what the trial is about, because manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter in this case, requires a direct action that you directly caused the death of someone else.
Mm-hmm.
The defense in this case is she wasn't even there. He was alone in his truck. He bought all the equipment. And then the interesting thing that the prosecution is saying is that that manslaughter charge is antiquated. In this mm-hmm. day and age, we have cell phones that put you right there. We have an internet that puts you right there. You can do anything over the internet. You can cause someone to kill themselves.
Kit, tell us about some of the more dramatic or important moments in this trial.
Well, I would say probably the most interesting witness was a psychiatrist who testified for the defense.
Mm-hmm.
what his main message was, what he called a transformation, took place in Michelle about 2 weeks before Conrad actually killed himself.
She's going to get so irritable with him. I'm just suddenly so irritable because hostility, we'll see hostility, we'll see anger, and we'll see grandiosity. We'll see her deciding with him that she can help him.
And according to the psychiatrist, it was a change in her meds that brought about this transformation. And she went from encouraging him to get treatment to encouraging him to kill himself.
She's not doing something she thinks is criminal. This is bad. She's found the way to use her unique power to help and to love.
It was almost like a light switch, her transformation, and that's evident from the texts.
This feels incredibly complicated, this entire trial. In a sense, it feels like it's about 4 or 5 different things at once. It's about accountability, it's about texting, it's about mental illness, and the teenage brain, which feels kind of fragile. Is all of that part of this trial?
Very much so. And that's what makes it so interesting and so sad. You see how these two people evolved, and they're both very fragile, and they're both in and out of mental institutions. In addition to Conrad trying to kill himself on previous occasions, Michelle would cut herself. And the prosecution argued that she, in fact, was doing a lot of this to get attention from the popular girls at school to become the, quote, grieving girlfriend.
So this week, the defense and the prosecution gave their closing argument, and now the judge is making a decision. What were the closing points made by each side?
Well, the prosecution said, even though she wasn't there physically, she was there virtually.
Mm-hmm. She was in his ear, she was in his mind, she was on the phone, and she was telling him to get back in the car, even though she knew he was going to die. And she did it for attention.
And she was really driving him to do it. And the defense says,
she thinks that she's doing the right thing.
They say she came to believe that she was helping her good friend do something that he really wanted to do.
Conrad Roy knows what he is doing, Your Honor. He made a choice to commit suicide. This is not a homicide. Michelle Cotty did not kill Conrad Roy. It's sad, it's tragic, but it's just not a homicide.
The judge in this case is expected to issue a ruling today. We'll be right back.
Michael?
Hi, Ms. Bernard. How are you? It's Michael Barbaro.
Can I spell my name for you?
Sure.
It's Lily, L-I-L-I.
Lily Bernard is one of the more than 40 women who have accused Bill Cosby of sexual assault. She and several other of those women have attended his trial, where he faces up to 30 years in prison. I spoke with her on Thursday.
If I pause, it's because I'm trying to be considerate of background noise.
Sure. And I think just so people understand that noise, my first question to you may just be where you are so people can understand it.
Sure. We are in the courthouse, Montgomery County Courthouse. In the hall, we are awaiting the verdict of the Bill Cosby criminal trial. Earlier this afternoon, the jury came out, and we were all in the main courtroom in the presence of Bill Cosby, his defense team, the prosecutors, Andrea Constant, the victim, and the jury announced via the judge that they are deadlocked, that they have not reached the decision, and the judge ordered them to go back and to resolve their differences.
So Lily, how does that make you feel, that this jury is deadlocked now?
I must say that my first reaction was numbness And I was sitting beside a fellow Cosby survivor, Jewel Allison, and she was weeping. So my focus immediately became upon providing her comfort. Later, I was able to process my feelings, had some lunch, went outside, and I was verbally attacked by black Cosby fans. And I began with reading out loud passionately Ephesians 6, which talks about the armor of God. They were yelling at me and calling me liar and blaming and shaming me and, and yelling at me what took me so long to come out and crying, how could I try to put an old blind man in jail. It was quite a dramatic moment, which rendered me sobbing at the end.
Lily, you mentioned race as a factor here, and it seems like so much of the conversation in this case has been how traumatic this has been for the African-American community and what the Cosby Show and Bill Cosby represented for so long. And you, from what I can tell, were on the show, I believe, right? So
yeah,
it all just feels incredibly complicated.
Yeah, I did guest star on the Cosby Show in the last season. And for me personally, what it meant to have a principal speaking role on the Cosby Show was that I knew coming into it that I wouldn't have to play a prostitute. I wouldn't have to play a drug addict.
Right.
I knew I wouldn't have to play a single mom. And so not only did the role break the mold of, you know, the typical black role, but also just being on the set. I was used to being on a set where they're predominantly white people, and now on the Cosby Show there were black producers, black assistant producers, black cameramen, black people in makeup and hair. And so it was so positive. But then for those who were watching the Cosby Show through the television screen, what the Cosby Show did was to elevate the image of the black family. And that was incredible. And in the black community, there is a problem of absence with black father figures because of the targeting of black men by police, the unjust incarceration of black men, where, you know, black men are disproportionately incarcerated more. And so when black people look upon Bill Cosby, Dr. Huxtable, they confuse the image of Dr. Huxtable, thinking that Bill Cosby embodies the wholesomeness of Dr. Huxtable, and he does not. So this is a hard thing to release, this ideology, this imaginary father upon whom black America looked as their ideal dad. And so I understand, I empathize with these black people who attacked me outside of the courtroom today. I told them, as difficult as it is for you to accept, imagine how hard it was for me, personally, for me, the deep betrayal that I experienced, the added extra burden as a black woman of having to reveal to the public that this beloved iconic father figure is a criminal.
Lily, what does a deadlocked jury represent
mean
to you?
Oh, to me, it represents that women's voices are devalued, that my voice is devalued, and it's heartbreaking. It's a feeling of abandonment. I felt abandoned by the jury. I felt deep empathy and sadness for Andrea Constant, who has become a dear friend of mine over the course of 2 years, that she would be disbelieved by some of these people who witnessed her and her mother weep. So it was a feeling of abandonment, a feeling of deep sadness. I just gotta cry. I'm so sorry.
Lily?
Michael?
Yes, I can tell this is incredibly emotional for you, and I just really want to thank you for talking to me through through all these tears and through all this emotion. And I'm really grateful to you, Lily, so thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Bye, Lily. On Thursday, the jury ended its fourth day of deliberations in the Cosby trial without a verdict. The judge has asked the jury to come back today and keep trying. It's not clear what's dividing the jurors, but Cosby's defense team spent most of its time working to establish inconsistencies and mistakes in Andrea Constant's account of what happened. If the jurors are unable to reach an agreement, it would result in a mistrial. Here's what else you need to know today. Senators from both parties are expressing anger that a plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act is being drafted in secrecy, with the input of just a handful of Republican senators.
Mr. Chairman, I assume that you've seen the bill, and I'm not asking for details on this, but can we get some general outlines of the Republican plan?
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has set a goal for voting on the health care plan, which has already passed in the House, by July 4th, and has defended his decision to keep the legislation from his Senate colleagues.
Look, we've been dealing with this issue for 7 years. It's not a new thing.
The Daily is produced by Theo Balcom, Lindsay Garrison, Rachel Quester, and Andy Mills. Lisa Tobin is our executive producer. Samantha Henning is our editorial director. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsverk of Wonderly. Special thanks to Martha Daniel, Jess Biggood, Graham Boley, Randy Scott Carroll, Peter Sale, Pedro Azzotto, and Michaela Bouchard. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you Monday.